having a confused look on his face. And go.
Go.
Okay. Well, fine. Ash, I went. Okay. What's going on?
Hey, it's been a while.
Look at
We got
the Mountain Boys. This is how we can divide. There we go. We have the Mountain Boys on Fridays. We'll do the Island Boys on Thursdays. This is great.
Jordan is the Soggy Bottom Boy.
See, but we have a theme song, Island Boys. You guys got to get like a. We'll do Mormon jokes. You guys can. You should dress up. Have a little name tag.
Very winsome.
I'm Elder Jim. He's Elder Tim.
You're not even supposed to call them Mormons anymore.
Hey, what are they called now?
They're just the Latter-day
LDS.
Latter-day Saints. Okay.
LDS. It's like UPS. It doesn't stand for anything anymore. It's just UPS.
LDS. So many things that I want to say right now, but the ghost has gotten the better of me, so I'm not going to do it.
Is it the Holy Ghost?
Is there another one? Goodness gracious. Okay, what are they doing with these deacons in the BCA these days?
The ghost has gotten the better of me.
He tamed my tongue is what I'm referring to. All right. Well, hey, everyone, welcome. This is a podcast where we just kind of hang out with each other and we go through tweets just that we found interesting, whether it could be spiritually interesting, could be interesting as dads, as fathers, as people who enjoy, as purveyors of fine memes. You just never know. So we're going to just kind of roll through the week's offerings. And
dude, you got to stop playing with your cigar lighter, man.
It's not my cigar lighter. That's my pen. I have multiple playthings. Anyhow, the point is we are here. We are glad that you are here. And we're just going to spend a little time perusing the Twitter webs. So I don't know, Jim, why don't you start for us here? What was one of the first things that came to your mind that you enjoyed this week?
Sorry, I just pulled up one of the Hobbit ones, I think. This is one of them. Can you see it, Tim?
Oh yeah, the phone one. So somebody, I have no idea who either of these people are. Somebody says, why a bug would spend such a long fraction of its short life immobile on my ceiling beats me. Interesting observation. And then some lady said, this is how God must feel when he sees us scrolling on our phones. Which is a really good point. Jim and I had a couple of guys over last night, and it impromptu turned into a reading and a discussion of part of book 9 of the Odyssey. And we had a good little discussion on the part where Odysseus is talking about his sailors who found the island of the Lotus Eaters. Do you guys know what this is? You read this? Remember this? So basically, they eat these flowers on this island. Some kind of drug makes them high, and it makes them forget everything and forget all their pain and forget that they're on a journey. And so we had this great discussion about what are ways today that men eat the lotus, obviously actual drugs themselves. But we talked quite a bit about doom scrolling as a form of lotus eating, forgetting that you have a mission and forgetting your pain by getting lost and the pleasure of just nothingness, letting it wash over you.
That's a great observation. I like that one. It's so funny. One of the other, I'll share this with you, Jim, somehow, but it's crazy because one of the other tweets that I was looking at was by this guy, Sargon of Akkad. Are you Are you familiar with him?
No.
He's like a Twitter nim. His real name is Carl something. He's like a really well-known and famous guy on Twitter.
Just like doxing people left and right. Jordan Bush.
He goes by his public name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Believe the best. Ash. So he has a podcast called the Lotus Eaters Podcast, and he just did this long form interview, entitled something to the effect of why, unfortunately, I'm not a Christian. And he just basically talks about the fact that he just basically doesn't feel a need for Christianity or a need for God. And so it just was interesting to think about that. And we'll do a longer form treatment of it at some point, but second Lotus Eaters mentioned in the last 12 hours. So that was weird.
Wow. So I'd be curious to hear from you guys. How do you feel that temptation and that endorphin hit on the doom scroll, have you bought into or felt the pull of that casino effect of the slot machine on the Ever Scroll? And then if you have, what do you put in your life? What have you found that helps it not lead you down into the depths of hell?
I have an app on my phone because I lack the self-control to stay off of scrolling all day long and distracting me. So I have an app on my phone that basically blocks me out of social media and news sites until a window late in the afternoon when I'm already tired anyways and don't need to be so productive or focused on my family. But yeah, I really wish I just had all the self-control in the world to not be picking up my phone all the time, but I don't.
So this is different than the Apple screen time?
Yeah, because the Apple screen time, it just says, oh, your time's up. And then you say, well, I don't care. You can press the ignore button, which is, you know, very quickly what I started doing. So I paid for this little app that actually you can't really do anything about it. Once it's off, it's off.
What's the...
What's it called and what's your referral link?
No referral link, but it's called Freedom. And so it's pretty cool. I think there's a bunch of apps like this. I just heard about another one yesterday. I think it was called Roots or something like that. But... Mm. Yeah, you can set it to run on your computer. You can set custom lists, say, keep me off of these websites that I really want to waste time on. But yeah, it's a huge problem for a lot of people, myself included. I just started reading The Anxious Generation, this Jonathan Haidt book. Have you guys read this one?
I've not read it. I've heard of it.
Smartphones. Yeah, I mean, he has that great book, The Coddling of the American Mind, he wrote with another guy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lot of the same themes. Basically, parents are overly sheltering their kids and simultaneously handing them phones and devices that are making them, and just like a lot of adults, very miserable and anxious and kind of ruining their social lives. So yeah, I just started it. I haven't read very much of it.
Okay, good advice. How about you other guys? What do you got?
Osh is frozen. I don't know if that matters. Do you guys see him moving?
I still see him moving, but even if you can't, it'll catch up.
Sure. I think anybody that says that they don't have a problem with it is lying.
And last night we were talking about the Odyssey. We read this passage about where Odysseus is talking about Ithaca, his island that he wants to go back to. And he's saying it's not the greatest island in the world. And he says something, you know, there's nothing sweeter than a man's own country and his parents. And we were talking about how countercultural both of those things are, and culture where everyone just moves around all the time, mm-hmm. and they don't care that much about their parents or about authority in general. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Jim, we were just talking about kind of how fast-paced our lives are and how busy they are. And, you know, was this a problem for people in traditional societies? You know, would you rather have a comfortable, affluent life or a harder but less busy life? You know, who had the better lives? Do we, or did people living 1,000 years ago? I don't know.
I think that you were talking with Pierre earlier about lust and pornography addiction and how you can disable access to stuff like that on your computer. But at the end of the day, it still doesn't change necessarily what you're carrying around with you in your heart. Mm. Right.
Right.
So even if you use Freedom or any of these apps to stop yourself from doom scrolling, it's like you still want to do it. So I think there's sometimes like a proactive approach where it's just like get outside and go hiking or skiing or do something that just so fully absorbs you and engrosses you in it that you're not even thinking about it. But I think just with any sin in general, right, it's sort of this idea of when you're tempted to do the sin, have some sort of trigger in your mind that immediately redirects you to like going to prayer, like in that moment, you know, because we can't be doing two things in our minds at once. So if you're praying, you literally can't be doing that sin. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier said than done, but right, at the end of the day, it's, we got to replace what's in our heart with God, right?
Yeah, putting off and putting on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think it's, you pick one or the other. Do you focus on external habits and behaviors or do you focus on the heart? I think they are intimately related to each other, and it's good to not doom scroll and it's good to not look at pornography. But merely dealing in externals is not dealing with the problem and not really dealing with the deepest problem, but it's not nothing. And it does help you deal with serious problems. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, Jesus nails the Pharisees for being focused on their extra traditions that were there to help them keep the law. Not, I don't think, because they're traditions, and not even necessarily because they're not explicitly stated in the biblical law, but because they became so fixated on those things themselves. And I think Christian history and tradition has a lot to say about, yeah, sometimes there are traditions and there are external things you do that help you, but you need to be careful about not fixating on thinking that that's all you have to do.
So I agree with Tim, and I found help from Jamie Smith and his You Are What You Love. So early Jamie Smith, not late Jamie Smith. But that just that reality that the physical body is involved in sanctification and transformation. I was kind of discipled on the Piper head and heart, and then that's where your actions flow out of, and you got to make sure your heart's in it. But it totally misses the role of the body. So doom scrolling actually is a physical addiction. There actually is a rush of pleasure chemicals that you're experiencing. It actually, like, you can study it scientifically. You can measure it. And if we try to fight it without dealing with the body and the mind, I think we're kind of tying. We're fighting a sin and undesirable behavior with one arm tied behind our back.
Right.
And so I actually found a lot of help saying I need to address the physicality of what this thing is. And so for me, it was I need to daily work out. Like, okay, I'm stuck in front of a screen for a big chunk of the day because I'm having Zoom calls and I'm writing budgets and I'm creating content and I'm doing things and then interspersed to social media. And I just have pent up energy that I need an outlet for. Mm. And it happens to be that, hey, lifting weights and going for a run with your dog and just having outlets that are physical, they release all these same pleasure chemicals, but more naturally and a sustainable way. And then I feel rested after a while instead of anxious. Okay. And so I needed the physical piece to figure that out. And then I also needed the boundary. So for me, it was, okay, so devices don't come into the bedroom, right? When it's time to be done with the day and just have connection with family, to just have like read before bed, it's okay, only physical books in the bedroom. Like, let's keep the devices separate from a certain place in my life. And that was fruitful, and I sometimes felt guilty about it because I'm not spiritual like Jim is, and just going to prayer. So tell us, Jim, what, like, is it okay to not be so spiritual?
Just for the record, I don't actually successfully do that. My question was on the third. Do you think that, like, this time? I think what Tim was getting at before with the Lotus stuff we were talking about last night in this IRL podcast that we did. We hung out actually with guys around a campfire in IRL. It was great. But I think, so the question was, is this really unique? Like modernity, our devices, or 300 years ago when books started to become prevalent, did people view it the same way? Like, oh, you're bringing a book into the bedroom? That's a huge distraction from what needs to be happening in the bedroom, you know? Or something.
Right. I mean, it's like when you read The Republic and Plato is talking about this ideal society and he says, well, you know, when we have books, no one's going to remember anything. You got to be careful about writing things down. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean, it's probably true to some extent. I mean, it's like every technology gains things, but you also lose things and it transforms you at some level, probably in many ways you're not really aware of. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, last night we were talking to these guys, I said, no, I do think there is something different, you know, that there's the constant dopamine hit of things being updated all the time. And so frantically, I can't imagine that that's just a gradual change from what people have been used to. I mean, I just can't imagine that your body is physiologically designed to handle that much stimulation and so much light all day long and into the night. And I don't know.
Yeah. My daughter
she was wanting to get something, I think off Amazon. And she was like asking, she said, can we just get it right now? And my wife was like, no, we're doing something. I think, again, I don't think it was school, but it was something else. And she said, no, we're doing this right now. We'll get it later. And she, somehow they got talking about, my wife brought up the fact, she's like, listen, when I was your age, we had to go to stores to get stuff. We couldn't just order stuff online. And I hadn't thought about that reality in a very long time. Right. And so just thinking about, yeah, like we totally grew up in a, I mean, we grew up in even a weirder situation than a lot of people, but you still, like, you, there were certain times and places that necessarily limited what you could do or your ability to do that thing at a given time. Whereas, like, we kind of can do anything at all times. Right. And you could, I mean, electricity is a big part of that. The internet's a big part of that. Yeah. I mean,
does your technology outpace your ability to handle it or control it?
I mean, I don't know if this is the time to talk about this, but like, that's something I like thought, I mean, a fair bit about, of just like, one of the dangers of sin is that you, hey, yeah, Jim, me and you were talking about, one of the dangers of sin or the things that can turn something that's otherwise good into sinful, something that's sinful, is like taking something out of season. You know, this, if you look at like Adam and Eve in the garden, it's not that they, there's a lot of, you know, theologians who basically say it wasn't the fact that they ate the fruit, you know, itself that was the problem. It was when they did it, like they took it out of season. And I think that, yeah, that same thing happens with technology. And that's one of the things that when we talk with people about fiat currency, it allows you to bring back from the future something that would exist. It definitely would happen.
Right.
Very likely, but you can just, you don't have to wait, or you don't have to do the work on the front end. You just kind of create all these cool things based on debt and based on a bunch of other things. So I definitely think that that's a big part of it that produces a whole bunch of other bad fruit as well.
Right. I mean, the AI stuff right now too, I mean, it's early days still, but it's like, I mean, it really freaks me out in terms of what can we really be trusted with this kind of power, and what will this do to us to hand over these kinds of abilities to people? It's like, I don't know, like, I'm thinking of, is it the myth of Photon, the guy who drives the chariot with the sun in it, and his son wants to drive the chariot? And
I'll have to ask Grok to double check. Sorry.
I confuse it with the Icarus story, the guy with the wings. But this, I think this one is the one where the son wants to drive the chariot with the sun in it. And the dad's like, no, you can't do that. You're not ready for it. And he says, no, I'm fine. And he is not strong enough to handle the chariot. And he crashes and burns and destroys all kinds of things. And it's just like, I don't know, you know, the modern world, we're so confident that we can handle it, you know, just because you can, therefore you should. C.S. Lewis warned about this kind of thing a lot.
Well, I've got a tweet about AI if we want to switch to that now.
Bring it. I'll add real quick. This is like a perpetual struggle for me. The online versus not online. Like, it is just, you know, some of it is like, yeah, to Asha's earlier thing, it's like, yeah, like just having time when I'm working. For me, it's like, it's been difficult because there's sometimes where I'm working with people who are on different time zones. And so you're like, there's some times that work for them that are later in the day for you. So my day ends up getting extended. And so, yeah, this is just something I'm perpetually confronted with and, you know, feel like I'm failing at and, you know, trying to get to some sort of balance, but I'm still not satisfied. I've seen and felt the thing of like, all right, I need work out. Like, that sounds great. And then I just haven't come up with like a routine basically that facilitate, you know, I have to say basically haven't disciplined myself to do the, you know, to basically make that happen. But yeah, so it is very much a live issue and something that, yeah, I'm grateful to have guys who are doing it better than me where I can learn from.
Jim, could you pull this? I put in the chat just one quick picture to put a little cherry on top of this conversation before you move to the next one. Can you pull that up real quick?
Yeah, let me check.
It's in the Riverside chat.
Yeah, hang on.
Do you see, I see that there's messages in there, but I don't see them.
You got to tap the chat button.
I did. It's not there.
Okay, Boomer.
It worked for me. Left click, Jordan. There's two buttons.
I wonder, no, it's just not there. I wonder if it's because I need to like update my Riverside app or something like that, because I use the actual app and not actually being online.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, I saw that. Oh my gosh.
I saw this. Yeah. It's so
busy. Daddy is a doom scroller. He never really pays attention. Okay. Yeah.
I figured out the carnal way to get around the checking the Bitcoin price version of doom scrolling. Turns out after you do it 5 bazillion times, your dopamine sensors are fried. So it just doesn't, you know, you turn into the roller coaster meme guy where you're just deadpan the whole time.
It's true. You can add the price to your, to a complication on your Apple Watch too. And then it's a really kind of casual.
No, yeah, that's how I accomplished it actually. Because then you just are constantly looking at it. It's great.
Okay. Thanks right. for letting me share my AI meme. Go ahead.
Okay. Let me pull the other one up here real quick. All right. This one was great. Sorry, I got to like stop sharing and then share again. So I don't know. Maybe it's better to just overlay these later.
Okay. I saw this one too.
Yeah, this is the Adam Livingston one. In the age of artificial intelligence, you are no longer a person. You are a data set, a cluster of behavioral probabilities wrapped in a marketing skin. Goes on to say, coders are replaced by Copilot. Here I am. Designers replaced by prompts. So it's coming for you guys too. Don't worry. And then it goes on to say, where's the quote about Bitcoin?
It was up above. There it is.
Bitcoin rebuilds the sovereign stack.
No, it was, that's part of it. But yeah, AI is abundance unbound. Bitcoin is scarcity incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of was feeling some of this. There's some sort of dichotomy here. Like you've got these two technologies that are rushing forward to just move the world. And one of them feels like a force of evil and the other one feels like a force of good. And it's like an unstoppable force with an immovable object. What do you guys think?
Elaborate, explain what he means with Bitcoin being scarcity incarnate, only slightly hyperbolically.
I think there's this idea of like with AI, everything sort of just becomes this gray goo slop where it just gets regurgitated over and over and over again. And yeah, maybe it's able to produce some baseline things that we need to survive or something. But it ends up kind of putting us all out of jobs and we have no reason to exist anymore in a sense. Like we don't have a purpose. God gave us a purpose. He put us in the garden to work it, right? He gave us jobs. Whereas Bitcoin's kind of the flip side of that. It's, there's only ever 21 million, right? And so it's just this. It's the first thing in the world that there's been an inelastic supply of. And so it's like all value trends to zero in AI systems and all value trends to infinity in Bitcoin denominated terms.
Right. And with Bitcoin, you have actual digital scarcity, not just physical scarcity, whereas everything else digitally can be reproduced and AI is taking that to the max.
Yeah, it's just interesting that like the first thing that has real actual scarcity is a digital thing, because none of the physical things in our universe are actually scarce. I mean, with any sort of reason of like our ability to go out and get them, obviously the universe is a really big place and I'm sure we can find plenty of gold in the asteroid belt and beyond. But there's no like limit really. It's like the ultimate flex, right? Like God created this huge universe and probably we can't even see most of it. Like the light hasn't even had time to reach us, much less ever hope of getting there because it's expanding at an ever increasing rate. So like, even if we left in a spaceship at near the speed of light right now, we would never be able to access 99.99999% of the universe. And God's just kind of like, yeah, this is all under my fingernail kind of thing.
Right. I saw a, I haven't listened to John Piper much for a while, but I saw a little video clip of him pop up the other day on Twitter. Yeah. Did you see this, Jordan?
I did.
About ChatGPT. Explain the ChatGPT thing.
Say it again. Sorry, you cut out.
Explain it. You explain it.
Okay. So basically he's speaking and he basically types into ChatGPT, write a prayer in the style of D.A. Carson. I can't remember do you remember any other constraints?
You know, focused on the glory of God and sovereign majesty and, you know, the typical kind of John Piper, Don Carson thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so he goes through and like he reads the prayer that AI came up with. And it's incredible if you're just like looking at the, you know, the words, and again, it sounds Carson-esque, and he's like, is that a prayer? Was that the question? He's like, is that a prayer?
Is this worship?
This is worship.
He says, no.
And he goes, no. He just like, is John Piper exaggerated? And he's basically like, no. He's like, this is no better than the human heart. Like the human heart can parrot words. The human mouth can parrot words that have no heart behind them. And so he basically...
Yeah, and he quoted that passage from Isaiah that Jesus picked up to nail the Pharisees about these people draw near with me with their lips, and John Piper in it.
Their hearts are...
Hides. He said, you know, the AI does words better than me.
Yeah.
Worship is about feeling God's goodness, not just about saying good words about him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have two minds about the AI thing. I'm not fully... I'm mostly kind of apprehensive about it and worried about it and what it will mean for people and for the future. But there is a part of it that's like, there's some really neat things about this. And it does deal with a lot of tedious things, just like lots of inventions have made life less tedious. But yeah, you worry and you despair about what does this mean for people writing things, creativity. I had this moment a couple of weeks ago where I was just like, why would I even, you know, write any talks at all to talk about God and Bitcoin or anything, you know, it's all just AI can just reproduce a bunch of slop out there. And I thought for a moment, I said, well, maybe I should just write it by hand in a journal and I'll just write it for God. And that's all that matters. And he'll be the only one that ever reads it. Or I don't know, you just physically pass around your journal to other people that you want to teach and say, look, here's something real that I wrote with my hand.
Well, your kids will value that. Like I know guys that have just said, hey, I'm going to write this book or I'm going to do this podcast or whatever it is so that I can hand it on to my kids and they'll know, hey, this is what daddy believed. This is what was important to dad.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, what does it matter who thinks about, like, who should we really value their opinion? Well, it's God and it's our wife and kids and a pretty small circle of people, right? That,
right.
And outside that, they'll forget us anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes you think of it's a tangential discussion of we were talking yesterday about the ethics of money production and how we were talking about Elon and about how Elon just he's like, oh look, we there's not enough kids. Okay, I'm gonna go help. And so he just starts pumping out kids as if there's not means or there's not ways in addition to the means. And so I think that the same thing can be true and talked about in some ways. So like, they talk about the ethics of money production. So we all recognize that there's legitimate ways to make money and then there's illegitimate ways. There's legitimate ways for nations and stuff or whoever people to create money. And there's illegitimate ways. We could talk about the ordinal debate as well. Cause like there's people who are just trying to argue, why are you trying to mess around with, you know, why do you care if people are making money? And it's like, well, no, everyone recognizes that there's you ought to put limits on, you know, on where and how you make money, right? Like I could pimp out my body and make a lot more money, but I would be violating plenty of things. And so I think that we could, there's something similar in there to do with AI. Like there's lots of things that AI enables you to do, but the fact that AI enables you to do it doesn't mean that you should use it for that. It makes me think of David, where he says, I refuse to give to the Lord that which costs me nothing. Like they were trying to find a place to build a temple. And this guy had this piece of land that was perfect. And he said to David, hey, I just want to give it to you. And David's like, no, I'm not going to let you give it to me. I'm going to pay you for it. And the guy goes, no, I want to give it to the Lord. And David goes, no, I won't give to the Lord that which costs me nothing. And so I think that there should be things that are off limits for AI, and figuring out what those things are and how we decide is, an interesting and going to require more thought. But
so I think that verse is a really profound meditation on AI. So going back to the connection with AI and Bitcoin, I don't know if you guys have read, it's Peter Thiel's Introduction to the Sovereign Individual. And he makes the same comparison. And he says AI is essentially the technology of communism, Marxism, socialism. And Bitcoin is the technology of libertarianism. And that's the comparison he makes. He doesn't actually like dig in and flesh it out. Maybe he's done that in another place. It's just a very short introduction. But he just kind of throws that idea out there, which is what I'm hearing in this tweet that you're sharing. And it just strikes me that, so it's also similar to this concept of the money printer, right? Only, so we know, taking the analogy of like the Monopoly game, right? If pass and go, you get $1,000 instead of $200, all of a sudden the price of everything goes up because there's so much money in the system. And the same thing, AI does that. It's money printing for everything,
mm-hmm. Right?
Right. So the actual it's printing all this stuff, and in one sense you think, well, things are like the marginal cost of everything now goes to zero, and what does that do with life? What is that? It's this prosperity and abundance that actually leads to poverty, right? The so much knowledge, there's no wisdom. So much sexualization, no intimacy and fruit bearing. And I just think it's just par for the course of the like careening out of control path that our society is on. And Bitcoin is this very, it's almost like an ancient technology, right? Let's create these boundaries and barriers and this digital scarcity. The digital world is infinite, right? Ones and zeros can be multiplied to not eternity, but as far as the eye can see and the mind can imagine. AI can grow. People keep saying, this is just the beginning. Just imagine that. This is 4 years in. What will it be in a decade? So there's no end to all of that exploration and devaluing of realness through the abundance of what is digital. And then enter Bitcoin, digital scarcity, bringing in the ancient kind of ways and guardrails and boundaries of scarcity and reality, and it's tethered to energy in the real world. It just creates these tethers to the real world. It creates through cryptography these boundaries and these protections against human propensity to steal. And it's like, it fools us into thinking, oh, this is this digital future-oriented technology, and it is. And you can program on it, and you can put your ordinals on it if you really feel like you need to. You could do all this stuff, but it works, and it's needed because it actually brings the ancient into the modern. And I find that profound.
Okay.
Amen, bro.
Yeah, I haven't fully thought this one through, but I just have some sort of spidey sense where it's like, 10 or 15 years from now, when AI has gone wild, we're going to be super grateful that Bitcoin's there.
So yeah, it is interesting. I don't know. I get there. I just recently, I've just thought, if this happens with Bitcoin quicker than we're thinking, there's only 21 million Bitcoin. There's I'm just thinking there are so many wealthy people out there who have like effectively limitless capital, and you're going to have just the distribution of Bitcoin again, there's not a better way to ensure this happening. So like, I'm not, you know, there's only so much you can do about it, but I do just think, again, this is just the nature of like wealthy, powerful people are always going to, you're always going to have the poor with you. You're never going to eliminate poverty. This is never an idea that Bitcoin could ever eliminate poverty. But I do just like wonder, yeah, I could just see it making the disparity like even greater. But I don't know. I just think there's too much. I feel like there's too much for my brain to even be able to process.
So let's talk about another really advanced technology, quantum computers.
Oh, what?
So Alex Gladstein just went on What Bitcoin Did, and they're arguing about the old addresses that can be easily hacked by quantum. It doesn't exist yet, but
okay,
theoretically in the next 5 or 10, 15 years, quantum computers will come about and unlock Satoshi's stash, something to this extent. Mm-hmm. So the question is, should we hard fork Bitcoin and make those coins unspendable, or allow them to be a bounty for the first person that comes up with the quantum computer that can crack that?
Wait, to clarify, the bounty would be the old addresses?
The Bitcoin on the old addresses.
Not
addresses. There's non-quantum safe addresses. So, I mean, there's other aspects of Bitcoin that could theoretically be vulnerable to quantum as well. But we're just talking about, there's a bunch of old addresses, including a lot of Satoshi's original addresses that are not quantum safe. And so
everything else is soft forked and safe, right? Is that the idea?
I mean, we don't really know for sure, but I think anybody that was using like pay to hash instead of pay to key is safe. So let's just assume that that is true for the moment. So any of the, you know, P2K addresses, essentially the first person that comes up with a quantum computer that can get those will be able to unlock those coins and then of course spend them. And of course those could be bad actors, states that we don't like that are committing genocide or terrorist groups or things. So is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Should we do something to stop that from happening?
I think I just don't know enough about what the mechanics are of doing something about this. You know, and my initial thing is it reminds me of the conversation about Saylor and some people talking about burning their keys. It's a related thing, right? Where it's like, hey, this is a reward to, you know, whoever this is. And I'm like, okay. I mean, leaving this up to just, you know, not chance or providence, whatever you want to say, like whoever comes across these, like, okay, that's certainly one way to do it. Is there another way? I mean, I just don't know. I feel like I don't know enough.
Well, so one argument is Satoshi, let's just say Satoshi destroyed his keys intentionally.
Yeah.
So his intention, his will is to burn his coins.
Yep.
But we don't know. He could just be hodling them. So if we make the decision for him, is that a form of violence against him?
Nah.
That's not violence. That's absurd.
So
libertarian crazy idea.
Would you be saying like this, violating his will? So like the
let's say Satoshi is just deciding to hodl. He didn't actually destroy his keys, but then we release a hard fork that makes it unspendable. Is that violence to him?
If he's alive, he's going to know about it and he'll be like, okay, I'll move my Bitcoin to a new address. And then right before they launch the hard fork, oop, Satoshi's wallet got emptied. So yeah, if he's alive, the Duke can move his coins. If he's dead...
You're saying this is a truth detector to determine whether or not Satoshi is still alive?
Or if he still cares about accumulating Bitcoin.
Yeah. And then if he's dead, do you have to like honor his memory?
So
like, because we don't know his wishes.
You guys are on pro hard fork then?
Well,
I just don't know enough. I don't know enough about what are the trade-offs of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you pick the right side of the hard fork, you can sell the other side and dump it on the guys that are wrong. And so you,
I mean, there could be some really cool things that could happen with it, right? Like, so again, realistically, it's going to be a nation. Like, do we all agree in that?
Doing quantum?
Yeah.
Or, just, you know, like Google, something like that.
Yeah, but even then, like, I don't know. I don't have the specifics of this, but there's, from what I've read and heard, the cost of trying to maintain, yeah, there's just, it's very, it's just like not a sure thing that this ever even happens, but the cost of trying to make it happen is really prohibitive. So as far as okay, if we grant that it's going to have to be some sort of huge entity, very likely a nation, it is cool to think about, like, if it's a nation that does this, I mean, I guess that, well, at that point, this is where it gets down to, you're like, okay, at that point, would you want to do that? Because then you'd be you'd have all the other things that have...
Quantum actually solves a lot of really interesting problems, especially in like computational biology and stuff like that, where it could cure cancer and things. And so one way to look at this is just a bounty that it's like, yeah, race to develop the first quantum computer. And if you do it, this is the reward for doing so. And we all benefit because now we have quantum computers.
Yeah.
I mean, would you say the same thing about like the traditional financial system of some guy comes up with quantum computing and he can hack the entire financial system of the world? Would you say, oh, great, dude, that's just your bounty. Good job.
I think what's different about this case is that it's limited to a subset of the coins. Like if you're talking about just hacking the entire financial system and one guy gets all the money, then obviously the whole system collapses. So it's like if somebody gets 5% of the money, is that good?
I don't know. I just have a feeling that your average Bitcoiner loves the kind of mystique of the Satoshi coins and, oh, isn't it great that he died? And I mean, like, if you kind of put to them and they had their choice between going with the hard fork or giving this reward to whoever, I have a feeling most of them would say, what? That's crazy. You can't steal from Satoshi. I'm going with the hard fork.
So you think, as hard as it is to do a hard fork, you think the hard fork is inevitable?
I don't know.
Because the base case here is the fork doesn't happen. Right? Like the fork requires a majority of the people to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
Yeah.
No hard fork.
It's like, oh, this is your reward. Way to go, man. Good for you.
Well, I just feel like I don't. It's one of the things where I just wonder, I'm like, I don't feel like I have enough grasp at this point. Hopefully by then, when this happens, if it happens, we'll have more written.
I think it's pretty simple, guys. It's like, look, move your coins to a quantum safe address. And if you don't, then you're donating them to the cause.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it could be cool. That's what I'm saying. Like, it could be cool if you're like, all right, if a nation comes across this and then they use that as like some way to, so like, all right, we're going to put this in our national treasury and we're going to hold it for 100 years and we're going to enable, you know, free education or whatever. Like you could do all kinds of cool stuff with it. It could be like a, you know, national patronage for whatever.
I don't even think it has to be like that. It's literally just quantum computing could expand our economy by 1,000x and we're all 1,000 times richer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just talking the Bitcoin side of things. Yeah. I'm just saying, cause again, if it's going to be someone, it's going to be some group or nation or something is going to get it. Like whoever gets it is going to be, I mean, they're going to have, an insane amount of wealth. So trying to figure out how to steward that well is interesting.
Well, you got to think. So if we're talking 10 years, what is Bitcoin at in 10 years? So I did the math a while back, and I was actually using AI to do this. So when does Satoshi become the richest person in the world? And I'll have to pull it up again, but it's not that high of a Bitcoin price. Like he passes up Musk when Bitcoin is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, not even a million. So it's like, what is the wealth in 10 years then? And are you wanting to obviously they're already, I think it has to be a $1 trillion actor already to crack it and to do quantum. So here you already have a multi-trillion dollar company or nation state that then wins this jackpot that is actually the largest stockpile of value ever known to man. So, and it's just overnight. Okay, now they have it. So now what are they going to do with it? So that then, does that immediately, it would crash the Bitcoin market. And it's public, right? They have to, the moment the coins move, it's public.
Some dude on Twitter crashes the market.
Okay, some dude on Twitter says, "Hey, here's the link to mempool.spaces. Look, the Satoshi coins just moved."
Okay,
all of them.
People would freak out.
They'd freak out.
Hold on.
Quantum the question is, happen to make that happen. What if Satoshi moves his coins? You're saying in either case it crashes?
I think so. I think it would.
I
don't think so.
I'm not saying crash to zero. I'm saying there's a correction happening, and it's a meaningful correction.
The problem with the assumption is you're saying if quantum computer happens in 10 years, I don't know anybody who is anybody who's in the know who thinks it's happening in 10 years. So you have, that means you have 10 years. Even if it's 10 years, how far will Bitcoin become entrenched into the financial system within 10 years? If it takes 20 years or 30 years or 50 years, in Bitcoin, if it keeps following this trajectory, Bitcoin's going to become so far entrenched within the financial system that it's not going to be like, oh, you know, little normies running out and dropping, you know, like selling their, like dumping Bitcoin. I just don't think it's going to be as, I don't know.
Think about it though. So there's no way out here, because if Satoshi's will is to not have the coin stolen, he has to move them and it crashes everything.
Yeah, I'm objecting to the guys below here.
But the alternate case is if he doesn't move them and then somebody cracks it and they move them, they move either way and it accomplishes the same thing. So
the only way they don't move is if we don't get quantum computing. That's basically.
Okay. Here's another way to think about it. If you actually solve quantum computing to the point where it can hack these addresses, let's just say the world economy is worth $500 trillion and it's like 10% of the coin. So you're getting like $50 trillion or something.
We'll be denominating in Bitcoin by that time, Jim. Just I'm sure or not doing it.
Sure. But so it's like, great. You've come into $50 trillion of wealth, but the technology you just invented enables you to make quadrillions of dollars worth of value. So it's like, why do you care about the rounding error that is the Bitcoin that you got?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I redid the math, and so it's only a million. Is it about a million coins that we're talking about?
Yeah.
So that's, if Bitcoin's 3 million, then that's only $3 trillion. So that's not the, I mean, all things considered, that isn't this some end game type of jackpot. I think that would be par for the course of the kind of entity that would be creating quantum.
All right, let's move on. I'll share another one. So, Jordan, you had a tweet talking about SPACs plus BTCs giving you ICO vibes. And then there's another Adam Livingston tweet here where he talks about, it's a pretty long one, but in the middle of it, he says, this is the corporatized colonization of the Bitcoin protocol executed through a Cayman shell and priced in your grandchildren's tears. Agree or disagree?
Show the other one. Show the other one from Alex. Alexander Leishman.
Let me pull it up.
Shout out to River.
Let's see. Here, is it the first one?
It says for Jim, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
There are few people I trust more in the Bitcoin space than this dude.
Okay, here it is. Bitcoin plus SPAC shenanigans give me an ICO vibes. Don't like it. Don't trust it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about 21. Jack Mahler's. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yep.
Guys, it's okay. David Bailey likes it.
So I guess the question is, do you like MicroStrategy? And if so, like, why not 21? It's just a pure form, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you like Tether before this? Because this is basically just rebranding of Tether's stash.
Yeah. Again, like there's the question, do I like it? And then there's the alternative question, what do you do about it? Like, I mean, do I like it? No, I'd much rather Magnalia and Brilliance Labs and TGFB own that Bitcoin. But and move that? Like, what are we, what can I really do about it?
You ape into it.
Oh, you're okay. I thought you meant from the standpoint, do I like it as a Bitcoiner?
Yeah. So are you anti MicroStrategy, the whole thing?
No, I'm not against it. No, what I'm saying is it's inevitable that entities, the impersonal entities are going to own large amounts of Bitcoin. Would I rather a different existence, a different situation existed? Yeah. But in terms of, I don't worry about it because I'm like, what am I going to do about it? Like, there's nothing I can do to prevent 21 from buying gazillions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. But again, that kind of gets at what I was saying earlier, though. Is like, I would much rather, every single person we've ever talked to about Bitcoin have a, Damascus Road experience and wake up and just decide that they're going to ape into Bitcoin with copious percentages of their wealth. But I don't think that's going to happen. So,
well, yeah. So on the one hand, stuff like this seems to be making the acceleration towards hyper Bitcoinization faster, which is good. But then on the other hand, it's like warring with this ethos of we want decentralization at all costs.
Mm-hmm. What do you say decentralization at all costs? What do you mean?
Like, we want the Bitcoin to be as evenly distributed amongst 8 billion people as possible.
You're saying we want that.
I'm saying these are the two ends of the spectrum on this debate, right? Yeah. The one debate is you have the colonial overlords that have their massive plantations and we're all the slaves. And then the other end is we're all yeoman farmers like Thomas Jefferson, although he owned slaves, so okay, whatever. But like, we all have our 40 acres and a mule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Go ahead. Go for it, Ash.
So I get the ICO vibes too, though I was less present during the 2017 cycle and more during the BlockFi, FTX, Terra Luna. Like, remember the Bitcoiners celebrating the Terra Luna and these like stablecoin guys saying, "Oh, we're gonna hold the most Bitcoin." And you literally had this crap coin kind of altcoin ecosystem buying a whole ton of Bitcoin for their treasury to guard the peg on their stablecoin. And yeah, and there were people celebrating that and celebrating. And I mean, we're talking about the What Bitcoin Did podcast. Well, who did they platform? Who sponsored them? Like a bunch of the scammiest companies of the last cycle. Right, that just totally flopped, and a lot of people suffered from it. And so, like, when I ask the question, what would hypothetically create the next significant bear market? What catalysts exist? Where, like, how could this go wrong? And anytime in the markets, you see things getting overheated, and you see exuberance, and you see people moving out on the risk curve, you're getting closer to the next inevitable crash back down to reality. And so if there's this race to buy as much Bitcoin as possible and then to use financial instruments to leverage and margin and create all this value simply in a fiat universe, right? It's imaginary value. It's not I built you a house, right? Or a bridge. It's I took zeros from this spreadsheet and put them over here. And I bought this Bitcoin and now I can create these 12 products that you're going to buy. And you're going to buy it because you think you're going to get rich too. Until the last man standing. And then it becomes a greater fool errand that is hidden within a genuine, scarce, valuable asset reality. Right? So there's a kernel of truth, a Trojan horse, and then you let it in and you play fiat games, you get fiat prizes. And so I do have that fear. I'm like, what's going to crash that's going to lead to the next bear market? And I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's these entities.
See, the alternate take here is like FTX is selling paper Bitcoin, which is creating like an artificial ceiling to the price. But this stuff is actually creating like an artificial floor to the price because they're just there waiting to like suck up all of the, you know, supply side. Arguably, we should have been at a way lower price considering like if MicroStrategy and others weren't buying as much Bitcoin as they were, we'd be at a way lower price.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, I mean, again, I just don't feel like I have a good enough grasp on this, but I mean, the argument that, and they're trying to paint themselves as like the more pure Bitcoin play than MicroStrategy because they don't have all the leverage. They don't have all this kind of stuff. Again, I feel like I don't have enough grasp on it, but again, is that better? Okay, sure. Like that sounds better to me. Again, it's the same thing, right? Like so there's the ethics of money production. Okay. There's things that should govern the process of monetary creation. And there's the ethics of Bitcoin adoption, right? Like there's legitimate ways for this to happen. And then there's, you know, people who are trying to take risk and, you know, try to have their cake and eat it too. And yeah, that's kind of what you're describing. That's like leverage is an attempt to have your cake and eat it too. And if we're putting down wagers here, I don't know if the PCA allows this, but we're talking about gambling here. But if we're talking about putting wagers on what's going to blow everybody up, if I was a gambling man, I'd be putting big money on old Coinbase because there is nobody who gives me scammer vibes like those folks. They are just awful in terms of like, if you think about the head start that they had on everybody else and what they did with it, it is atrocious what they've done.
Well, if they go under, that's the ETFs. I mean,
I know it. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's the thing that, yeah, like it wouldn't be good.
Well, and MicroStrategy.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Okay. That's the contagion right there. Or the FUD that actually could rock things for a meaningful amount of time. There you go. Coinbase.
But okay. So the question is all this over financialization and financial engineering a rounding error compared to global M2 money supply growth in terms of its effect on the price of Bitcoin? Here's this tweet from Bitcoin Therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? Do you think M2 money supply is the real signal and all of this stuff we've been talking about is just noise?
Yeah, I mean, I think these two things, I think they can both have effect. Like again, in a reality, Bitcoin is adopting, it's being adopted, you know, exponentially for however long it's existed. And there's, you know, only 1% of the world that owns any of it. And more people are understanding it every day, have a need for it every day, all this kind of stuff. M2 going up like that, that certainly helps things as well.
My gut says that M2 is like probably 99% in the long run and everything else is noise.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, Bitcoin is about dealing with debasement and money printing. I mean, if you take M2 as kind of a rough way of figuring out how much money printing is going on out there, then yeah, I think probably. I mean, how closely correlated it is, I don't know. I see so many charts floating around of everyone's cracked the code of, oh, I figure out exactly what Bitcoin's going to do now. And look at, this is just like this cycle. I don't know. I've become a little wary and cynical about everyone and their charts. But in the abstract, yeah, people print money. And this is what Bitcoin was invented for, was to deal with all the money printing going on.
All right.
One more thing. I think if you're talking about the scale, if you're talking about the scale, like M2 is creating money. I mean, like the expansion of that is, I mean, the amount of countries that would need to be buying Bitcoin to have any kind of comparable effect is insane. So yeah, I definitely think the M2 is having a bigger effect.
All right, you guys want to end on one last one?
Sure.
Sure. I saw this too, yeah.
All right, so financial physics says landlords add nothing of value to society. Stefan Lavera says landlords are great. They let you keep on hodling and stacking Bitcoin, parentheses, growing at, say, 40% a year, while only charging a small fraction of the property price as rent. What do you guys think?
Well, we've had this conversation before, and I have other people in my life saying, why do you even own real estate, including the house you live in? And
I think there's great reasons to own a house, and not just in the financial realm. But yeah, this idea that landlords, you know, or capitalists or entrepreneurs are just bloodsuckers who don't add anything to society. I mean, that's crazy. It's like, maybe there's a lot of people renting who wish they weren't renting, but it does allow them to do all kinds of things that they wouldn't be doing otherwise.
I would say in a perfect world where real estate is not monetized at all, mm-hmm. I have no problem owning a piece of property for its utility value. But the fact that I'm forced to pay some multiple on top of that utility value because everybody else is monetizing it feels dirty to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dirty, and you can just question the wisdom of it. Because, the opportunity cost, again, three of the four of us are renting. So I think we know where we're making our bed here.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm against ownership. I've owned in the past.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to the point where ownership, especially after the COVID printing, is prohibitively expensive, at least at current interest rates, you know? And so, if Bitcoin didn't exist and COVID didn't happen, then maybe owning is a great thing, especially if it stops you from spending that money on other things like fancy vacations and fast cars and stuff like that. But that's not the world we live in. We live in a world of real estate that doubled in value, 6% interest rates, and real estate prices that are, if you just compare it to the rent price, I mean, most of what I've been looking at is like the cost of ownership is twice what it is to rent. So just rough back of the napkin calculations, it's like 50% of the value in there is because of monetization.
Yeah. And it doesn't just inflate the cost to buy. It also inflates the cost to build and the cost to rent. So all of all the industries surrounding real estate and the money printer, which is, I mean, back when debt was easy, mortgages were easy. And then all these things that are coming out now about the FHA and all of these loans, like, I think it's like several million loans that literally should have been foreclosed upon years ago. And the government, in order to keep housing rates up, keep the prices up, not have some big real estate crash, they don't foreclose. And right. And that, again, so it's all these fiat games that are keeping the appreciated value that, which is kind of like, I mean, going back to your, maybe we close on where we began of this is the drug that we keep being given by the government is, oh, here's enough. Here's your value. As long as your house is going up in value, you can be happy and content and not complaining, when actually all of it is, everything is burning around us and in its imaginary value. And if you're a younger generation and you're trying to enter into that world, it's the only path that's being offered to you is you will own nothing and be happy. And here's a little kind of box that you can live in with your dog or your cat, right? And that we went into this yesterday in conversations about having kids. The economic system is pushing you away from having a yard, having property, having space to raise a family. Urban living is making that impossible, and it's a part of the plan. It's the they're getting the result that they intended to.
Mm-hmm. Preach it. All right. Well, I'll leave it with this. If you want the price of Bitcoin to go up, start a Bitcoin podcast. Did you guys see this?
Are we saying there was hidden motivations in starting this podcast?
We're trying to pump our bags.
yeah. If you wonder why we're back above 90.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Welcome, guys.
Tim was doing some buying this morning, I think.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence when we started our podcast. Just look at the dates. Look, see when we started and see when the price turned.
Yeah, exactly.
Podcasting before it was cool. There we go. Some of us. Anyhow.
You flexing on us?
That's right. Flexing on you. I don't have any muscles to flex. Anyhow, appreciate you guys. Grateful for you. Anything else you guys want to add? Anything else going on in your lives that you want to alert the watching, listening public to?
We will be in Vegas, all of us together.
Let's go.
So if you want to meet up in person, reach out.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, we're going to be there for a TGFB event on Tuesday the 27th. We'll be there for, again, the conference, the main conference itself. Some of us, it'll be our first events. Again, putting our status as Bitcoiners in doubt, the fact that you haven't been to one yet, but we won't mention any names. Okay. Anybody, anything else?
No, this is fun. Thanks, guys. I think we should do it again.
Oh, we will. Appreciate y'all, and we'll see you on the next episode.